we are back with episode 821 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville. Do we get to talk about shows now, John?
We do get to talk about
shows
now. And yes, we get to take a little bit of a tour of another country. In this case, the wonderful countryside of Westeros. And we'll also talk about some other things that are a little bit more far-flung than even that. But before we do any of that, Gary, if you don't mind, could you give a disclaimer?
Absolutely. During the course of our discussions, we might reveal secrets about what's happened over the past few episodes. So if you're not caught up, you might want to pause and catch up. Otherwise, listen to our witty comments on some amazing shows.
That's right. And what we're actually going to do here is maybe get started by talking about the other shows, and then we can talk about, of course, Game of Thrones. That would seem to make a little bit of sense. So let's go ahead and start with a show that has been kind of a favorite of yours, Gary, and it seems to be fairly consistent right now, and that would be Dark Matter. What are your thoughts on the season so far?
I'm enjoying it primarily for the characters, the overarching story arc. I just don't feel that they've brought us into it enough. It's, of course, there's corporations fighting with each other. There's independent city states or planets. And then there's also some alliances of planets. And they describe them in words, but I just don't feel they haven't gotten us into the middle of them. So I just don't feel that attached to that part of the storyline, even though it is sort of the big picture storyline. Instead, we're dealing with our numbered crew and some crew who have left, and we're dealing with their problems and their events rather than this whole big intergalactic war that seems to be simmering on. And I think they want us to care more about it, but they're just not showing us enough of it to do so. So you're left with the character pieces, which are still very nice. I'm enjoying them, but you don't get much growth. And I think that's one of the criticisms that some people do have with this show, and it's justified. I don't feel that the characters really have grown at all from their initial reveal to us. We're just moving forward through storylines with these set pieces. And I'm enjoying the set pieces a great deal, but a lot of people do want characters to progress and develop and change in response to some of the situations that they've been in. And it isn't happening with this show. For better or worse, me, it doesn't matter, but I have a few friends who've made that exact criticism, and it's justified. But the storylines, at least within their little capsule universe of the Raza or immediately where they're visiting, still have been very entertaining for me, and I'm enjoying the original setup premise, which is sort of what they're staying in, where it's, you know, these people who find themselves in an odd situation, and they're trying to do what they feel is the best thing to resolve the situation. And they've been, you know, I wouldn't call it episodes of the week kind of thing, but it's definitely that sense of where you're taking a set established group of characters and dropping them into a situation, letting them figure it out, and then they sort of move to the next situation. So I guess it is episodic in that way, and while everything's going to huge, large arcs, and they do make an effort to put one in the show, it's just not the larger arc just isn't happening.
Now, as a kind of contrast, because it seems like sci-fi almost asks you to compare and contrast these two shows, Killjoys this season. I mean, we're getting close to the middle of the season already, because it is a shorter season than Dark Matter. But what are your thoughts on Killjoys so far?
Well, it's exactly the opposite of what I was just describing in Dark Matter, and I'd never thought of it exactly in the terms that you just set up, John, but you're 100% right. We're getting tons of character growth within these characters. The huge overarching storyline we are very much involved in. We're getting thrown every which way. We're seeing, you know, decision makers directly involved with our main characters, and everything really is hinging around them. They're not just sort of stuck in a universe that's going to war. They're making the war, and or at least, organizing it and to fight back. And it's very much a hands-on type of storyline. And I can see now, as I'm discussing this now, where there is this large dichotomy of fans. Most people who like Killjoys do not like Dark Matter, and vice versa, because they're literally almost polar opposite shows now that I'm thinking about it. And I enjoy both of them, I guess, being the science fiction geek that I am. But at the same time, I can see how anything that might appeal to someone in one, you would not find it all in the other. So I can see how the camps would be divided on this show. Killjoys, I'm loving all the character growth. Even Duchess seems to be growing with Klein dead, and, you know, still wanting to do what's right, not just for her team, but you know, for the whole universe at this point. And Jacoby, still growing as well, thinking he's killed people, even though it turns out he didn't. And then we have Dev with all this ability to control the green goo, and it's you just gotta hang on Killjoys, where you almost sit back and relax for Dark Matter. So I'm enjoying both of them. If I had to pick one versus the other, I'd still be hard pressed. But at this point, I think I'd have to go to I'd probably have to watch Killjoys before I would watch Dark Matter, even though I would watch both.
Hmm. And I kind of understand that, because it sounds like, just from what you're saying, that at least this season, I mean, overall, you might say that, yeah, it's pretty enjoyable overall, but this season it seems like Killjoys is a little bit more, is bringing it a little bit more than Dark Matter is. So,
yes.
Yeah. So well, even if they're executing what they do well, it seems like Killjoys is executing what they do well better than Dark Matter is executing what they do well.
Well, as I was saying, they're both science fiction, but in some ways they're very different genre shows, where a lot of the status quo is staying in place in Dark Matter all the time, where Killjoys, it's your background or your setup is changing so dynamically that you have to hang on tight to just figure out what's going on, because you know the person that was in charge of the rack all of a sudden is dead. The yeah. person, yeah, your new ally turns out to be the enemy stabbing you in the back. The hope that you had to do a coup de grace in the war just evaporated. Where, you know, in Dark Matter, they're like, oh, geez, we got trapped. Okay, one of us will get us out.
Mm-hmm.
It always happens. So, I mean, it's where it's a much more, you know, sort of comfort, relaxing, predictable show. Killjoys is not predictable to me.
Right. Gotcha. Now, just to talk about a couple other shows right now
sure.
that are kind of trickling some episodes out this summer as they get towards the end. Turn is doing a nice job of wrapping its storylines up as it kind of hones in on its main villain. That is one of my favorite villains that Edmund has mentioned him many times before. Simcoe is just so much fun to watch. He's so sadistic and just kind of fun as someone to love to hate, so to speak. And, it really feels like, as there's only a couple episodes left, that we're really definitely getting towards the end of everyone's storyline. Similarly, Orphan Black, I was a little bit worried that they were going to be able to really get towards towards a conclusion there. And it actually feels like they are managing to do so. So I'm kind of surprised, but in a good way, by just how much, how well they're doing. And it even feels like Edmund feels the same way, because he's been giving some pretty good scores to Orphan Black during these last few episodes as well. There was one episode, just the last one before that was on our list, Gag or Throttle, which was all about Rachel, which is one of the more important characters, and it was a really nice retrospective on events from her point of view. So it was really nice, and there was also a lot of body horror in that particular episode as well that just really brought some memorable scenes, let's put it that way, to the fore. But both Turn and Orphan Black, as they get towards the end of their respective seasons and series, are doing a nice job of wrapping things up. Edmund is also greatly enjoying Killjoys, giving similar scores to what we have. And I think that he has some comments also on another show that we watch that we can incorporate as we go. One show that I know that you guys are still catching up on is Twin Peaks, The Return, as we are just past the midpoint and kind of wrapping up the second act. I think that the most recent episode that was on our list to watch, which would have been part 11, finally started to bring the second act into better focus. I think that they had a real lull for a couple episodes, but they kind of got their mojo back the last one that I watched before we recorded here. So I'm glad to see that. That was one of the better episodes in a while. And it was actually full of a lot of interesting developments. And yeah, we're getting to the end of the second act now, and towards the home stretch with Twin Peaks: The Return. So I'm hoping that they can really deliver a strong resolution to both this revival and really the whole series at this point, because we know that there are no plans to revisit, because quite a few people have passed since the production. So, yeah, so that's doing pretty well. And you can, of course, read my reviews for Twin Peaks over on VogNetwork.com. I try to give some kind of insightful comments on, each episode, if I understand what's going on, which isn't always the case. But I try.
Yeah, it's not easy with that show.
An effort is made. An attempt is made. But yes, I know we kind of ran through some of those quickly, and I know that Edmund has some other comments, but we'll continue to incorporate his comments as we talk about really the show that I think everybody is watching right now, and that is Game of Thrones. And even as we record, there's a new episode to watch, but we're only going to talk about the first two episodes right now. So those are, of course, Season 7, Episode 1, Dragonstone, and also Season 7, Episode 2, Stormborn. And both of these episodes came in above average. In one case, it was the highest scored episode for the week for its premiere, and then it just missed the top spot in its second episode. But that was even a more highly received episode, I think, the second one. So, general comments, Gary, for these two episodes, just your reception of the beginning of this shortened seventh season.
Very much so. I thought it was a very slow start with the first episode. It felt very much like eye candy and scenery, and the setup was a bit longer than I would have expected for Game of Thrones. Usually things start moving a little bit faster, so that was somewhat disappointing. But then we hit the second episode, and they took off running. I enjoyed a lot of that episode. I enjoyed the interactions with Jorah again was a particular enjoyment, as well as to call it a battle would almost be giving it too much credit. I guess the slaughter of the Ironborn versus the Ironborn.
Yes.
That was unexpected, very surprising, and Theon's cowardice surprised me somewhat. I thought we had moved through that, and it was surprising to see him jump into the water. I wasn't expecting it, and I'm chuckling at it now, but it was somewhat of a shock to me. So the second episode caught me off guard in several different ways. I did like the fact that during the second episode in particular, when Jon Snow was talking about going to see Daenerys, that people stood up and said, no, it's not your place. They really didn't feel it was his place to go, and they voiced their concern and how they had already lost his father, as well as Rob, and they really didn't want their king leaving again, even though he's decided to go anyway. So that was a sort of interesting dynamic, that you actually have the people speaking up against the king's wishes, right, which is something you might not have had before this point.
Yeah, we'll get into each storyline a little bit more, but I did want to give some of the comments that were received from members of the extended family for our show for the first two episodes. So for Dragonstone, the opener, Henry said there wasn't anything too earth-shaking that happened, but a lot of it made logical sense within the show's world, so kind of echoing what you said. And Nadim had a kind of a similar comment here. A well-made but admittedly underwhelming season premiere that is more concerned with table setting than any explosive developments. It's a bit disappointing after a 13-month wait and only a dozen episodes to go, but I have faith that the powers that be won't let us down so close to the finish line. But they gave pretty high scores. I mean, yours was kind of the lowest score out of all of them, but they were all over average, of course. But Henry gave it a 9, Nadim gave it an 8.5, as did Edmund and I. Edmund gave a much longer comment here, so I'll go ahead and read his. Really enjoyed the Arya Walder Frey cold open, although it was a bit eerie watching her pull off the face, Mission Impossible style, on the night that we learned of Martin Landau's death. Yes, a bit of a checklist episode, complete with maps, giving us the state of play around Westeros, but still satisfying. Well done break from their usual editing style, laying out Sam's monotony, even as he uncovers a compelling reason for Jon and Dany to hook up. And I mean, form an alliance. and hey, Jorah's alive, and Lady Mormont still kicks ass in the north. Littlefinger, as the snide wallflower, still manages to look ominous while just watching the potential cracks in the Stark Alliance. The Ed Sheeran cameo felt a bit on the nose, but interesting how conditioned we've become to expect that situation to end in violence. Instead, humanizing Arya a touch does serve to short-circuit what was starting to feel like an unstoppable force. And the stately occupation of Dragonstone felt right after all she and we have been through, with a nice tagline to all the setup. Let's begin indeed. So yeah, he kind of touched on a lot of the storylines there. I think that I agree that Arya, in that first scene of the season, taking out all the Freys, was a great start. And almost I feel like that's why the first episode was a bit disappointing, is that that first scene was so, you know, so good and got everything off on such a great start that everything after that felt like it was playing catch up to a certain degree. Like, it wasn't quite as good as that one moment was. Now, for the second episode, Henry also gave that one a pretty high score, saying, "The show takes this opportunity to make true on its title. Each ruler and major player in the Game of Thrones takes stock of where they are in the proverbial game, and I find that a lot of them are stuck in the past." Edmund says, "Fascinating opening with the Ladies' War Council, a reminder of how much the male rulers have messed up over the years." Yes. Danny and her girl power alliance, as we all predicted last time. Even if it did feel like B&W, I'm guessing that's, I'm trying to remember exactly what that stands for, Benioff and Weiss, perhaps, taking a moment to address all who questioned Danny's strategy last week. Also, watching on the HBO Go app, saw their explanation of Arya's line after Nymeria turns away. I did take it as they intended, even if I'd forgotten Arya's line to Ned about not being a conventional noble lady. But it's interesting how many thought it meant that she turned back to King's Landing and Cersei. Not quite the disconnect with the audience of the infamous Cersei-Jaime coupling, but another case of them not being as clear as they intended. Loved Lady Olenna's Be a Dragon advice, since it's completely unclear who that would best serve. More blood-curdling old-town editing from Jorah's scabs to Hot Pie, who actually is a baker now in our world, too. That's right, he does dire wolf-shaped breads. the actor, so that's a nice little meta thing there. And I'm really enjoying Euron, partially because after knowing him from Borgen, the Danish West Wing, it's like watching Sam get reincarnated as a deadlier Captain Jack Sparrow. Wow, there's a lot of references there. Yes, he's a weird amalgam and departure from the books, but he certainly took care of the show's sand snake problem, as you mentioned in your comment, Gary. Yes. Kind of clearing the decks of some extraneous characters.
It's one way to keep the budget down.
It is. But, you know, I think that what that really tells us is that, yeah, they had a slow opening, but once they got past that point of setting up everything, they're moving very quickly. And they have to, because there's only 7 episodes this season. So for them to go any slower than this would be, well, it would drive the audience insane.
Well, that's what the first episode did for me. I was like, wow, this is all nice. We don't have time for this. Go, go, go.
Yeah, but I think it's like, I think that that is probably, unfortunately, what we're going to have to be used to for the beginning of each season, because there is going to be such a break. I think that they're even saying that there could be a... there could be a as long, if not longer, break between this season and the final season, which would really drive people crazy. But kind of remind, I think what the intent of the season premiere really was to remind everybody what, where everything was and where everybody was at and what all the various conflicts were. And maybe they underestimated the audience, because I'm sure that there were a lot of people that kind of brought themselves back up to speed by watching a couple episodes. And those last two episodes of the sixth season were so strong that it really didn't need a recap. If you had seen those, you probably remembered everything that was in them.
Yeah.
And they did a nice job of recapping it in the first 2 minutes. So did they need everybody to kind of restate their current situation? Probably not. That said, I think that they got things going much more in the second episode. And just as I go through here and... check on a couple of the storylines just to see if we covered them. Yeah, we did talk about Arya a bit when we were going through Edmund's comments, but anything else to say about Arya and where she's kind of at right now? I like the fact that they humanized her a little bit and set her on a path back to Winterfell.
Yeah, that was surprising. I was waiting for the list to get uttered again, but that didn't happen either. Well, you say that, and then I remember as she was talking, I don't think she knew that her family was alive. You know, she's been so out of touch and not in Westeros, or at least Westeros proper, for so long now that she wasn't aware Jon was alive. I don't believe she was aware of Sansa either. So it was, to hear that she still had family alive, I think changed the whole game for her. She felt like she was completely alone and isolated and didn't mind losing her life in her pursuit of vengeance. But now that she actually has family still, it might change everything.
Yeah, because the last she heard, I think, was that I think she even said that the Boltons were in charge at Winterfell, and I think she was under the impression she was the last of the Starks.
Yeah, because she knew Rob was killed, and I think she did.
And I think you were right that the she probably was sitting there thinking to herself, "Yeah, what do I have to lose? I'm going to go and get my revenge, and if I die in trying, then my family's dead already." But now, with Jon being king of the North, what does that mean for her? That's a really good turn for her character, I think, because it kind of keeps her from becoming so unsympathetic that you really can't feel for her anymore. Because, she was on the verge of,
she's becoming, like, the angel of death. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just... And like you said, when you have nothing left to lose, that's fine, but she has something to lose now, which is going to make things a lot more interesting. At the same time, I like the whole idea of her acknowledging that she's come so far that she really can't go back to what her life used to be, and that kind of insight that she has into things. So it's going to be interesting to see who she becomes at this point. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say she was, you talk about that, her previous life or whatever, but she was never the proper handmaid anyway. She was the one with her little her sword, and wanted to learn how to fight and things like that. So even when we first met her, she was never the handmaiden that Sansa was, for example.
Right, and of course that just serves to remind not just for Arya but for, everybody, that all of these characters, who they were in that first season, has changed dramatically. For the surviving Starks, you've got Sansa definitely has changed. Jon, in a big way, has changed, and still he has a ways to go in order to really understand who he is. And then even Bran, when he kind of comes back into focus, he was barely touched upon so far, but he's dramatically changed as well. So her entire family, everybody, has gone through a huge arc. So it's really interesting to kind of see that put into focus just on her end, but it does apply to everybody.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you still have so many of the people like, Daenerys and Cersei, fighting for the old structure, and Jon just is completely over it. He's on working on an entirely different level. He's like, it doesn't matter who I bend a knee to, none of us will be here.
Right.
Yeah, he's like, well, we got to go. Oh, well, that's showing. It's like, no, you don't understand. We need that dragon's glass. We don't have time for this. We they're going to slaughter us. Come on, let's go. So I enjoy the in a sense that Jon's transcended the Game of Thrones into a large extent at the moment.
Yeah. And that is so much of his time right now is spent trying to convince these people who want him to deal with things on this familiar level. And worry only about vengeance against the Lannisters and everything else, and he's like, no, guys, we've got some other much bigger problems. If we don't resolve that, none of this matters. And like you said, that makes things a lot more interesting in terms of what is he going to do and how is he going to be received. Because I actually think that may answer our question in terms of how he goes from King of the North to maybe being someone that is more aligned with Daenerys because of his Targaryen side, is that, if he goes...
John, I would like to point out that they have not formalized that on the television program.
Okay, but they've all but said it.
But regardless, he needs an army and the dragonglass, and the dragons are definitely a potent force that he needs to tap into, regardless of blood ties of any type. So it still makes sense, regardless of heritage, that he would seek her out.
Well, where I was going to go with that too is that not only does that make sense, but then it puts Sansa in such an interesting place, because Bran's in no position to take over as Lord of Winterfell, as the Green Seer and all of that. And Arya's really not going to be that person. So when Jon makes her essentially acting Queen of the North, you could just kind of see her eyes light up to the possibilities. And granted, so did Littlefinger's. But I think that that gives Sansa a much more interesting set of possibilities as far as she's concerned. And it also kind of decouples Jon from having to be the one in the North if Sansa is ready or willing to take over. And that would almost make Littlefinger the thing that she has to overcome in order to fully kind of take on that role. But we'll see. I mean, that may not be the way that it goes. There's, like you said, the story is moving up very fast right now. And one of the things that I found really interesting is that, you know, Daenerys lays out this whole plan with Tyrion's help and her alliance with Dorne and with Highgarden. And the next thing you know, her entire plan goes up in flames at the end of the episode.
Oh, geez, look at the time. Everybody's dead.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, we just outlined this whole plan, and within 30 minutes, oh, so much for the plan. Which really just means that anything that you think you can assume at this point may not be true. But, yeah, that's... I don't know. I come away from that feeling like Daenerys is in a pretty bad situation, but at the same time, I remind myself that if Euron has now kidnapped the head of Dorne, at least the current head of Dorne, Dorne already hates the Lannisters enough as it is. Isn't that just going to make Dorne want to align with Daenerys even more? And they could easily throw what's her name? Illyria? Alaria Sand? They could throw her to the wolves. Because she's pretty illegitimate as a leader anyway, but that just becomes a really good excuse for Dorne to declare war against the Lannisters. So I don't know if that's the smartest move, but I guess we'll find out. What do you think about all that?
I know it's definitely shaking things up a lot, and I'm not sure how they're looking to bring everyone together, because we get the sense that everyone has to, you know, all these different disparaged groups at some point have to put their their angers for each other aside. But it just seems like it's just stoking up worse and worse. And given our short time frame, I can't imagine how they're going to pull it all together.
My guess is that they are going to... Well, first of all, I mean, it all depends on how fast the White Walkers become an immediate threat. Because I could see Jon and Daenerys deciding that dealing with Cersei and the Lannisters and the wars in Westeros and just resolving that now so that they can deal with the White Walkers might be an option. But if the White Walkers move faster than they expect, then maybe that's going to be the thing that they have to, focus on. And, I didn't notice this myself, but somebody pointed this out, right? That this whole time, everybody's been talking about, oh, the wall is going to keep the White Walkers out. The wall is going to keep the White Walkers out, right? Mm-hmm. But they haven't had the kind of winter that like this in a very long time. And if you look at the map, when they go through the beginning, when they're going over, you know, all the locations, mm-hmm. in the past, there's been this big ocean off to the right, you know, Eastwatch by the sea.
Yes.
That whole area, as of this season, now that winter has come, is iced over.
Yeah, I saw that for the first time.
Yeah, and what people are saying is that, oh, wait a second. You've got this big wall, and everyone's like, don't worry, the White Walkers can't get through the wall. They don't have to get through the wall. They can walk around it. mm-hmm. And that would be not only a really ironic thing, but that would make the stakes go up dramatically, very quickly. That the threat that they thought that they could hold off for a little while longer could be there so much faster than they expected. And that could completely change things. They could want to deal with Cersei, and they may have no choice but to deal with the White Walkers right away because of this geographical change. which I can't believe was not an obvious thing until it was like, wait a second, they changed the map. Crap. The White Walkers can literally walk right in the front door.
That's well, nice. You know, and we didn't mention it much yet, but, you know, John, of course, realized this already, and he actually is having the wildings.
yes.
Be, I guess, be unofficial now, Night's Watch.
Yeah.
And they're actually manning castles now to defend against them. So, you know, he's working to get his army in place, and it's and at this point, nobody's at least nobody in the North was complaining that loud when that happened. Maybe it's just because they're glad to get the wildlings out of Winterfell and back up near the wall somewhere. But nevertheless, there still wasn't much problem or concern voiced with them doing that. So
not yet, anyway. No, it seems like they are at least willing to let that happen. But I don't think that things look very good for the wildlings. Let's put it that way. Mm. Because, yeah, I know that they are thinking of... I don't know if they're thinking that that's where they will attack. Because I don't think the White Walkers will attack directly anyway. Like I said, I think they're going to go around. At the same time, once they go around, they will have that one location surrounded. So they can just slaughter everybody there at Eastwatch, because there's really going to be no way for them to escape. So not a good situation for the wildlings. Let's see, what else is there to kind of walk through as far as this is concerned, these first two episodes? Anything else come to mind for you?
I did enjoy the speech between Varys and Daenerys about loyalty. Mm. I thought that was a very interesting dance that was played. And even though, of course, we know it's choreographed in advance, I still enjoyed it. I enjoyed him reassuring her and at the same time being brutally honest. It was a very refreshing type of dialogue. You don't see Varys often get into discussions with someone where you feel he's actually talking at his level. So much of the time you feel like he's either manipulating or talking down to someone else. But in this instance, I didn't feel the sense that he was. I wouldn't say that he was definitely was at disadvantage, but he was definitely working in a large extent to someone who was a peer. Mm-hmm. So that was an enjoyable speech. I'm trying to think of the last time we might have had one that was quite at that level of depth, probably with maybe Arya and the Master when she was at the House of White, Black and White. Probably is the last time we had sort of a discussion at that level, for at least for me. So I enjoyed that a great deal.
Yeah, one of the things that I like about that too is, you know, it was a nice contrast to Littlefinger and Varys. I know that we talked about that before, that they are really kind of the spokespeople for the different philosophies that go into how this whole game should be played. And Littlefinger is definitely thinking in terms of, you know, just agents of chaos, right? Kind of the whole knock everything down and then I can rise in the ashes type of way, you know, of thinking. Really just not looking at the big picture, just what he can get out of it. And that, oh, you know, I'll be the strongest of the survivors if I can just play this game well. Where Varys, what I really like is the fact that he's there to remind Daenerys and anyone who may be, you know, her replacement if necessary, that all he wants is for there to be a leader that, you know, doesn't need to be perfect, but speaks for the people, or at least keeps the people in mind. And you know, he wants a kingdom that is as stable as possible so that the people suffer the least. And it's just such an interesting way for them to just put that bluntly right from the start. You know, what does he bring to the table? He brings the voice of the people. And he'll do whatever it takes in order to protect the most number of people that he can. And it's like you said, it was a really good discussion, and I like the fact that Daenerys, as a queen, was able to see past the, probably was a big temptation to chastise him for that, but she was able to see the fact that that is a valuable thing to have someone like that back you and to be, you know, loyal to at least the potential that you bring. And I also like the fact that at the same time that Varys was saying all of that, Tyrion was sitting there trying to smooth things over and Daenerys was having none of it. And it was kind of that interesting thing where, yes, you are the hand of the queen, but and you are there to keep things as stable as possible and kind of, you know, be my chief of staff, so to speak. But, yeah, you don't get to just play me when I really need to know where I stand with one of my advisors here. So that was a really good discussion all in all, a really great scene. What else is there that kind of caught your eye in these two episodes?
I should be used to wholesale bloodletting, but the attack on the fleet by the other fleet just completely caught me off guard. I didn't see it coming. I thought, oh, their plan's going to roll out perfectly, and Daenerys is going to, you know, be at the top, and then that happened, and it shocked me. And I guess, you know, already having lived through the Red Wedding and everything, nothing should surprise me anymore. But I just thought that Daenerys had a great plan and that there'd be nothing to, to mess it up. And then there it was.
Yeah, I think that at the same time, you know, as Edmund said, they kind of changed up the character a little bit to make him a little more formidable. And I think that's because they know that without Ramsay around, they need somebody to be a despicable villain that everybody wants to see get his. And, you know, while Cersei is there too, it's not quite the same. Cersei is kind of the evil person behind the scenes that you can't wait for her to finally get dethroned. But there is that difference in terms of, you know, someone like Euron being so actively barbaric and cruel. Yeah, it kind of gives the season a more immediate villain, which is good, and you know, someone you love to hate kind of thing.
Yes.
So I guess what was the other thing that I was going to bring up, because Sam in an old town, you did bring up Jorah and that scene where he's at least attempting to cure Jorah, which is pretty brutal to watch in its own right, pretty rough. But I like this whole idea that they're kind of setting up, that Sam is at the center of, is in the exactly the right place to get the information to the people that need it, in particular Daenerys and Jon, because, you know, he's the one passing the information to Jon about the dragonglass. If he gives certain amount of information to Jorah, once he's cured, is supposed to go and report back to Daenerys. So he's kind of in this very useful spot in terms of not just exposition, but also getting people to know the things that they're supposed to know. Where, you know, Bran is going to be in a great place to give more, you know, backstory for Jon's heritage and lineage and all of that, and eventually maybe help with the war against the White Walkers. Right now, Sam is in that position to be more helpful as the kind of the go-between and kind of getting all these people talking to one another, which is vital to getting the story moving. So and his little montage of him doing all of the latrine duty was pretty hilarious, mm-hmm. if not incredibly disgusting.
So, I'd say both.
Yeah, both at the same time. But it's just nice to see all these characters finally getting to a point that their life means something in the story. Because Sam, for such a long time, was missing purpose, and now he actually has it, which is really quite remarkable and really good to see. What else would you say about these two episodes of Game of Thrones?
I feel like we're seeing, I guess, as we've now known these characters for a while, as they've advanced up, now that they're all their respective heads of their families or armies, be it Cersei now in charge or Jon Snow now in charge or Daenerys with her army to finally attack. I feel like I have a different perspective on this, you know, I'll call it the Game of Thrones, but, you know, the battle for Westeros that we didn't have with the previous groupings of, you know, of Jon and Tywin Lannister or any the last tier of rulers who've all at this point been killed off. Now all the people sort of in charge and making the decisions, we've seen them come up from the ranks, and it feels like I'm much more invested in this round of who's going to win versus where I was before, because the other rulers, they were already powerful and charge and experienced, and we didn't sort of see the development of them. But now for this whole range, we've seen them come up and develop. And so it gives me a very different perspective on who wins or loses this time.
Yeah. I think that like you said, now there's more investment, right? I mean,
yes.
We've seen them grow to this point. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this shakes out. And I think that, yeah, we all have our preferences at this point. And seeing if they can get to that endpoint and get and actually achieve victory is going to be a real fun experience. And it's just going to be frustrating that there's only 7 episodes, and then we still got to wait to see how it all shakes out. Is it really necessary to give George R.R. Martin more time? Just to try just finish it out. He's never going to get those last two books out. Just finish the series already.
Oh, he will, John Mason. Your grandchildren will enjoy the finish to the story.
Right. When Brandon Sanderson writes it.
Yes.
Oh. Hey, better him than Brian Herbert and Kevin J. Anderson. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough for because last season felt like it went so fast. It's going to be really tough to have this season end so quickly and then have an unknown wait. It could be 2019 before we see the last season. That's going to be brutal if they wait that long. But we'll find out. We'll find out, I'm sure, very soon what their plans are. But any last thoughts for this week of episodic discussion, or the last 2 weeks worth of episodic discussion, actually?
The shows that we're watching, there may not be numerous, but for me, they're all very captivating, and the feels like, geez, I want to. Yeah, I guess I'll say the quality of them is up drastically. I'm not watching any filler shows right now. Everything seems for me to be firing on all cylinders. I'm very engaged and anxiously waiting for the next episode for all these shows.
Yeah, I think that's something that is a good kind of lesson for ourselves right now, is that this summer has afforded us the opportunity to just watch shows that we are engaged in. It helps that a couple of these shows are on their final run, so the stakes are higher, and it's just easier to enjoy some of these shows that maybe were frustrating in the past, like Orphan Black. There's only a handful of episodes left, so it is really starting to come together, and it's fun to watch all of that culminate. Same thing with Turn. You know, that's actually a show that I've obviously enjoyed quite a bit, and it's kind of nice to see it get to go out on its own terms. Twin Peaks being, you know, a show that, yeah, it was very much look forward to and anticipated, and it's not exactly what we were expecting, but that's probably all for the best. And then Killjoys and Dark Matter, both really getting to have a highlight this season by being one of the few shows running new episodes and good, solid sci-fi, right? So,
yep.
Everything right now that we're talking about are shows that are worth the time from our point of view. None of these shows are coming in below average. I mean, that's one thing to point out. You know, both of these weeks, all these shows were at 7.5 or higher, and many of the shows, the vast majority of them, were an 8 or higher. So, as you said, Gary, the quality is there. I mean, the second week, the one that we just ended, in this last week of July for us, all the shows were between 8 and 9. That says a lot. I mean, that, as you said, we're honing in on the quality here. We're not, you know, just watching things just to watch them. We're watching the shows that are engaging us. And that's a philosophy that I, at least personally, intend to take into the fall.
Yes.
Where there's so much that's on, but, you know, other than maybe a few shows where it's their last season and, you know, okay, I'm going to see it through or whatever else, there are some shows that, yeah, I'm pretty much ready to say, I'm done with. I'm just going to watch the shows that really engage me or bring something unique to the table that I really want to see. So this summer has been pretty good for clarifying that, at least in my own mind, because I enjoy having that time to, you know, read a few more books, play a few more games, go do a few more things that's not, you know, TV or screen related, if you will. So yeah, it's been a good summer for that. It does mean that this summer we've been a little bit more sporadic, but I think that's all for the good as well. It kind of helps us clean our palate a little bit, and it means that when we do have a show, we're talking about things that we're actually engaged in. And what I hope is that next time we'll see if next time we can get Edmund on, because I think that he'll want to say a few things about these shows that are wrapping up. Hopefully his schedule will work out for us. But I think in keeping with this particular set of episodes, you know, we went 2 weeks without new episodes and we really only had content for 2 episodes.
Yeah.
So I think we'll probably go ahead and do another 2 week break rather than try and force episodes next time and force content. We'll go ahead and let shows accumulate a little bit more. A couple of these shows are going to get real close to the end of their seasons. So that's actually going to be pretty good. And a good incentive for us to have more to talk about. So, yeah, I think just expect that. You know, if anything unexpected happens, you'll definitely see new episodes. But, yeah, that's going to be my plan, is for us to go ahead and let a couple weeks' worth of material pile up again. Any other last thoughts, Gary?
No, that's about it. It is a little slow this time of year, so.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, hey, it also means you guys have an opportunity to, you know, stay caught up. One last thing I want to say is that, of course, right now on our network, a couple shows are off right now because of some things that have happened with one of the hosts of the of one of our other shows. I won't get into any details, but Rob obviously has some things going on personally right now that he has to put his attention towards. And we just want to openly state our support for him as he works through that. So we all want to be supportive of each other as we are going through our through various hardships in life.
Absolutely. So
all the best to Rob and his family. Okay, we're going to go ahead and wrap up our episode here then, and so we will be back in a couple weeks. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.